This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Red Sox fans, here are the bastards of Boston baseball.
Welcome, everyone. The bastards are back for this early week edition of the podcast. We are brought to you in part by the Minute Media Podcast Network. The Red Sox just wrapped up a three-game set against the Chicago White Sox, dropping that series 2-1. They are currently 9 games back from the division-leading Tampa Bay Rays. They are currently tied with the surging Toronto Blue Jays for basically the one spot in the wild card. So they are essentially the two wild card teams right now, even though they're tied. Yankees are half a game back. If they drop their game to the Mets, like it looks like they're about to, Francisco Lindor just hit a home run. So if the Yankees go on to lose that game, they will be a full game back out of the wild card. It is a tight race, an absolute dogfight. Hopefully the Red Sox can hang on. Quick disclaimer, as always, for any first-time listeners, this is not a homer podcast. We call it how we see it. When the Red Sox are dominating, we will celebrate that. When they are getting destroyed, we will be critical and at times savagely blunt. If you are easily offended, press the stop button immediately. But for those who embrace it, let's get rolling. I am Terry Cushman, coming to you from Lewiston, Maine. You can harass me on Twitter at CushmanMLB. You can find the podcast account at Bastards_Boston. That is the more fun account between the two. Jason Kelly, not with us tonight, has family obligations. Charlie Smith joining us from Providence, Rhode Island. Two of us going to hold down the fort. Charlie, how you doing?
Doing well, man. You know, this is a little bit of a fun series. I'm just happy that it's over. I'm happy we were able to grab 1 out of 3.
We needed 2, though. I mean,
I know we did. We did.
I'm convinced of one thing at this point. I'm dead set, 100% convinced that the wild card game will take place in the city of Toronto. I'm sure of that.
They're a team not to be trifled with right now. They're playing darn good baseball right now, and they have arguably the best player in the American League swatting balls outside the park at will. It's just unreal what he's doing. He's just mashing. He might hit 50.
That lineup is just explosive. Yeah, the pitching has improved immensely, and they're going to bring it. That's the worst case scenario. They murdered us the last 2 or 3 series we faced them. I want no part of Toronto, but there's no way around it at this point, I don't think.
I'm inclined to agree.
Another thing, too. I'm loving Mike Monaco with every game he broadcasts. He's bringing more and more intensity to the broadcast, which I like. I can't stand Dave O'Brien. I don't know how realistic it could be that a guy like Monaco can come in, but Dave O'Brien is never going to win over at least 60% of this fan base. They're never going to like him. I don't know what type of a hand he had in getting Orsillo out of here or how much influence he had, but I hope Mike Monaco has the attention of Nesson, let's put it that way.
I'll say this much, as far as Dave O'Brien's concerned, in the last 2 series, I think the only line that stands out was when Hunter Renfro jacked one out to left field over the monster, and he said, "You want your magic? There's your magic, baby." Outside of that line, I can't remember hearing him say anything memorable, epic, on point, fun.
Admittedly, that was kind of a good moment that he helped capture. Yeah, and then, of course, Renfro had that laser beam throw to get out, I forget his name already.
Wendell, I think.
Yes, Joey Wendell at third base, yeah. Who should never have tried to leg out that triple, should have settled for the double. Maybe we lose that game if he does, but...
Yep.
But, yeah, so... The margin we had in the wild card has been trimmed. Just absolutely attention. Trimmed.
Attention, listeners across the galaxy, all the way from Australia to Houston. Do we have a pew problem? If so, our friends at Manscaped have cleared you for takeoff with their fourth generation and brand new Lawnmower 4.0. Kick your pubes to the next planet with the Performance Package 4.0. The orbits in your pants will feel like you're in zero gravity when you use the best tools for the job from the leaders in male grooming. Join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and get your rocket ready for takeoff by going to manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping with the code FANSIDED20. The Performance Package 4.0 also includes the Weed Whacker. It's like having a little astronaut chop your worst weeds up top in your nose and ear. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. For a clean trinity and beyond, your space balls will thank you.
Red Sox on Friday dropped that game 4-3. Tanner Houck got the start. Not as stellar as he was previously. We might get into him shortly. Saturday, Red Sox win that one. It was kind of an ugly win, but if a win's a win, that's where we got it. 9-8, Connor Siebold making his debut, getting into him a little bit more extensively as we go. Then today, series finale, not much offense to be had by either team. Red Sox dropped that one with Garrett Whitlock on the mound. Lory Garcia hit a no-doubt walk-off. Red Sox lose that series, basically 2-1. So let's get into studs and duds. A series loss means we start on the duds side. Charlie, who do you have? You're on mute, buddy.
Dude, it's old age, man. I'm telling you, I forget. So there was a lot of excitement surrounding this individual, and I think it was just because things were going great. Then they're going insanely good, and then everything came crashing down. And so there's a little bit of excitement surrounding some of your rookie prospects. They brought up all sorts of guys this year. And most recently, they brought up Connor Siebold. And a lot of people thought, okay, this is going to be, you know, this is going to be it. This is going to be one of the future guys. You're bringing him up in an incredibly difficult situation against arguably the best team in the American League in a stressful matchup. It's kind of hard to expect him to do very, very well. And the reason why he's my dud in this one isn't because he allowed 2 runs on 3 hits. He didn't even get a strikeout, and some people don't care about that. He registered a little over 60% for strikes. It was that twice in his game, people are going to say, oh, but he got the double play ball. He got saved twice because of the double play ball. Twice. His fastball was topping out at 90, 91. In the majors, that's not going to cut it. Lefties were absolutely destroying him. Nailed the home run. Pair of walks. Against righties, that's fine. But you can't have that much of a difference between lefties and righties. It can't be that much of a variation where you can't do anything against lefties, but you dominate against righties. Not in the majors. You can't. You can't live on that. And against a team like the Chicago White Sox, no, forget it. What are they going to do when they face other opponents in the National League? Imagine facing, you know, the Washington Nationals. Juan Soto's a lefty. He's going to mash against Connor Siebold. Bryce Harper, if, you know, the Phillies come into town, he's going to destroy him. So it's just one of those things where for me, that was my dud. I wasn't impressed with everything going on. A lot of those situations, two in particular, because of the double play ball, could have gotten severely out of hand had he not had the double play ball.
No strikeouts as well. It wasn't the outing we thought. I mean, Tanner Houck didn't look great this series, and he's had his ups and downs this year. But even with the ups and downs, he's light years ahead of guys like Seabold right now, who just doesn't look ready to compete, you know, at the majors, and probably could use a lot more time to develop. Had some high strikeout games with Pawtucket, 8-9 strikeouts during various starts, getting swings and misses, but that just didn't translate up here against, albeit a potent lineup. We threw him into the Shark Tank. He didn't get a cupcake Orioles start either, but still, if Seabold is going to contribute at any point going forward, it probably has to be out of the bullpen, most likely for a one-inning appearance. I would say that's all he's got for 2021.
The other thing, too, about Seabold is it doesn't matter who he faces next. He's not going to do worse than this. I don't think he'll do worse. I think he'll do better. And I know that I'm going to catch flack for this from a couple of listeners. I've been corresponding with quite a few people the last couple of weeks, but you can't expect people like Tanner Houck and Connor Seabold to all of a sudden start lighting it up and be the replacements for, you know, Chris Sale, who's going to be out for 10 days or 8 more days. I forget how many more games he's got to be out for because of the COVID. For Pivetta, who wasn't doing that great, who had a great start in this series, you know, it's unfair to expect that from your rookies. You need to have a little bit more coming from your leaders on the team, and you can't expect these guys, Pivetta to come out there, Erod to come out there and throw 7 innings of lights out baseball, but at the same time, you also can't expect your rookies to be doing what the aces on your staff and the veterans on your staff are supposed to be able to do on a regular basis.
Right, and just so everyone's aware, Alex Cora has basically said Seabold will make his next start. He was optioned anyway to make room for Pivetta, so he'll make his next start in Worcester. I have no idea how many games are left because they started a month late, so I'm guessing they're going to go most of September. I keep meaning to check on that. But he's just going to hang out down in Pawtucket for now, or Pawtucket, Worcester. And another thing that kind of, I don't know if it's a concern, but his average fastball velocity, only 90.5 miles an hour, not going to get it done. I mean, you've seen Davey Garcia with the Yankees, who has no velo, show up and just get lit up. And as far as I'm concerned, is a busted prospect, so... you know, Andrew's the prospect guru, and he can break down a lot of this stuff better than anyone. So we'll get more thoughts on Seabold coming through, but in the coming episodes. So anyway, let's move on. My dud for the series will be Rafael Devers. Devers was 1-for-10. And there was a couple of worse guys, but, and we'll get into them in the dishonorable mentions, but let's see, Devers struck out a total of 6 times in his 10 at-bats. So strikeouts were up this series. Walks, well, he did get on base via the walk 3 times, but here's what I'm getting annoyed with. Is the constant hissy fits we're seeing out of him in the batter's box, whether he's jawing at the umpire a little bit, or if he's simply mad at himself, for striking out or for missing a pitch that he otherwise would have hit, or the times where he simply pops one up to the right side of the infield. and you're seeing him slam his bat into the ground, and starting to get a little bit tired of it. And the previous Rafael Devers that we're all used to in seasons past, 2020, 2019, is this goofable, lovable guy in the batter's box with the awkward facial expressions and whatnot. And it's different now. He's just, it's nothing but hissy fits. And I don't want to see that. I just want to see him focus on having better at bats, and that's it.
He's it almost feels like he's trying to press. Like the batting average is better. Feels like this month in relation to last month, but the strikeout numbers are incredible. I mean, last month he struck out 15 times in 108 at bats. That's like one out of every seven. He's got 17 strikeouts in 40 at bats. It's almost half. Right. He struck out more in half the month, not even halfway through the month, and then all of August. He's just trying to do too much. He needs to take a step back, stop overthinking it, play your game. Because when you get in your head like, oh man, I got to make up for that strikeout. Oh, now I got to make up for those two strikeouts. I got to have a home run. And you don't do it, you're adding so much extra pressure to yourself. You're still a kid. Have fun, play the game, worry about the next pitch. Don't worry about last at bat or the last pitch. The last pitch is now the past and doesn't matter anymore. Your last at bat is garbage. No one cares about that. Whether it be a home run or a strikeout, you need to focus about the next pitch that is coming your way. And that's the thing. I think in time, he's going to realize, all right, you know what? I sucked that last at bat. I've been sucking all game. I just got to focus and try to hone in. Spend an extra 30 minutes in the cage. Try to figure out what you're doing wrong. Make the adjustments that you need to make, because you can't be striking out 50% of the time. You've turned into the, you know, hard-hitting Bobby Dalbec from the beginning of the year, where Dalbec was striking out half the time. It's awful. Now Bobby Dalbec and him have almost switched places. It's eerie. You know, it's very odd. Yeah.
I'm starting to realize I'm just going to have to start saying nice things about Bobby Dalbec. But just to wrap up the hissy fits thing, we've put a lot on Cora, and I don't think Cora has really shined this year. I'm not on Twitter putting up fire Cora hashtags, but aside from him reining in Devers, where's Martinez with that being the leader, trying to rein him in? Where's Bogarts? Where's all these guys just trying to help him? I mean, Devers has been in the league since 2017. At some point, he's a veteran, isn't he? At what point does he become a veteran? I mean,
I think when he stops looking like an 18-year-old, 16-year-old kid, like he still looks like a child. But you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. When are your leaders going to start leading? When does Rafael Devers take off the, oh yeah, I'm going to continue following hat and put on the I'm a leader hat? Because even though he's showing leader numbers, it doesn't feel like it. It's like, imagine Ken Griffey Jr. in the late 90s when he was mashing 50 home runs. But like, yeah, I'm not the leader of the team. Like, I'm here.
He's the kid.
Like the leaders of the team I'm just the kid. You know, you got Randy Johnson. He's the leader. I just hit home runs. I just mash. No big deal. Like, imagine having like that mentality or thinking you're that. He is trying to, it's almost like you're trying to press. You're trying to embody this, like this person, this aura that you're just not there yet. Or if you think you're there, you need to put the hat on and own it. And own it. Because when you're on, you're on. When you're not showing veteran leadership. Like you mentioned, the poor attitude, the just kind of getting frustrated. That type of stuff, if you've been in the league 5 years, there are people that have been in the league one or two on your team. They're like, oh man, well, he's a hard-hitting guy. He's one of the leaders on this team. Man, it's okay to show your emotion. And coach doesn't say anything. That's not good. That's not good at all. Because when the team's doing well, no one's saying. When the team does poorly, people are going to start talking. You got the about me guys. Xander Bogaerts on the team. I feel like I could get more. Honestly, as soon as that happened, I feel like everything just started crashing down, because Xander was looked at as the leader of this team above JD Martinez, above Chris Sale, above Nate Eovaldi, above Devers, above everybody. It was Xander Bogaerts' team. As soon as Mookie left, the torch got passed to Xander. As soon as Xander opened his mouth, there was no one to hand the torch off to. And it just, it feels like everybody's trying to drive a car in a blizzard, in pitch darkness, with no lights on. I don't know who the leader is right now. I don't know.
Well, if you go by just the past week or so, it sounds like it's Chris Sale now based on Cora's comments. But I don't want it to be a constant thing. And until it stops being a constant thing, that just tells me there's no intervention with him. So hopefully it happens. Getting into some other guys, Kyle Schwarber in the cooler as of late, was 0-for-11 this series. Only three strikeouts, though, so not quite as ugly as Devers. Hunter Renfroe, 1-for-11, not really making great contact, not walking a ton either. So hopefully these two, I mean, they're primarily at the top of the lineup now, so as they go, the Red Sox goes. So hopefully they get it. Not, I'm sure they will, but man, the clock's ticking. And we got a tough series against Seattle here coming up. Let's see. That is about it. Pulecki was 0-for-3. Not going to get on him. So any thoughts on the lineup before I get into the pitching?
No, you were asking a question earlier about how many more games are left in Worcester, and I believe the answer to that question was 17.
Wow, that's still a lot.
I'm double check. Actually, excuse me. 6 and 5 is 11 plus 2 is 13. I can't math right now. Okay. So 13, and then that's before any games that are in October. But I don't know if they play any games in October. So I think it's just the 13. They got 6 against Syracuse, 5 against Rochester, and then looks like just a 2-game series against the Lehigh Valley. Is it the Iron Pigs or something? I forget their. I think it's the Lehigh Valley. 2-game set there. Yeah.
Yeah, that's Andrew's department. But yeah, so it sounds like we were talking about Siebold with that. So he's got probably at least 2 more starts in Worcester coming, I would imagine. Okay, so some of the pitching. I mean, Tanner Houck is grinding at best. Only went 3 2/3 innings, gave up 3 hits, walked 3. So the walks continue to be an issue, and gave up 3 earned runs, only struck out 1. So he came off a stellar 5-inning start and followed it up with kind of a rough one. Again, this is a very potent offense. They got Eloy Jimenez back, Luis Robert has been back. So Abreu has been having not quite an MVP year, but a very solid year for being 34, 35 years old. So, I mean, I guess we have no choice but to throw him out there every fifth day regardless and just hope he figures it out.
Confirmed, by the way, Terry, 16 games left for Worcester.
Okay, we're up to 16. Final answer.
16. Final answer, 16.
Okay. And the Yankees lost. That's official. Mets win that one. So Yankees will be a full game back from the Red Sox and Blue Jays in the wild card. All right. So, yeah, we won't hammer on Houck, but you'd love to see him turn it around. And then finally, I guess today, Garrett Whitlock, are we concerned that he essentially, you know, gave up the game-winning run?
It's Chicago.
Yeah. It does seem like he's got a little bit of fine-tuning to do, though. I mean, he's been hit or miss lately, and he's been prone to the long ball. So hopefully he gets it squared away. All right, let's switch over to the studs side. Basically, only one win to go off of, but who's your stud for the series?
This is going to come as a shock to most because I haven't really been in this man's circle of trust, and he hasn't been in mine all season either. That's Christian Vasquez. Vasquez did very well in his two games, got on base, did his job. 2-for-3, 2-for-4, games 1 and 2, 3 singles, a double, a couple of RBIs, he had 1 RBI, 1 walk. I can't complain. So it's a 4-hit series for him, which he's done twice in the last month and a half, and that's both against Tampa Bay. The last time they had more than 4 hits was July 11th, and that was against Philly. So when your catcher's getting a couple of hits and he's doing his best to get on base, I'm thankful. I'm happy about it. And I just felt like with everything that happened, there are so many guys that just didn't get it done. Not many players had 4 hits this week or in this series. In fact, you can count them on less than one hand. Outside of him, I don't believe there were any other guys that were gunning and cracking with 4 hits or more. So that's my guy.
He's having a good September. His first month of the year, April, he got off like gangbusters, and there might have been a bench clearing incident. We'll have to check on that later with between Lindor and Stanton. And if that was at the end of the game, I'm not sure, but
there was some form of like whistling gesture about tipping pitches and whatnot. Lindor actually had 3 home runs.
Did he? Okay.
Yeah, his third one was the one that won it all. So I don't care. As long as the Yankees lose, I don't care. I'm a Mets fan this series.
And as long as electronics aren't being used, it's legal. So if the Yankees are tipping, that's on them. But anyway, getting back to Vasquez, he had a great April. Was looking like he could be continuing his 2-year run into a third year. I mean, we were saying he was a top 1 or 2 catcher behind Real Muto, and then he just gradually slipped. And just now in the month of September, he's getting it back, hitting .379 for the month. He leads the Red Sox in the batting average category. OPS, he's .917. He also leads the Red Sox in that category in the month of September. He does not lead in OBP, but he has exactly a .400 on-base percentage. So looking good for the month. Had a great series, 4-for-7, like you said. If the Red Sox are going to have some spark in the lineup, hopefully he continues to do what he's doing. And then when Schwarber, Renfro get back on track, maybe we're going to start putting up some crooked numbers again. But yeah, good stud this series for Vasquez. Wasn't really much to go on. In fact, he had 4 hits. Next most was 3. A bunch of guys had 3 hits, but still Vasquez had the best series
right
at the plate. My stud for the series, I feel pretty good about this because a month ago we never would have thought he would be on the team. I'm talking about Travis Shaw. Hit a 3-run homer in the Saturday game, got the party started, and then he finished the party by hitting the walk-off base hit in extra innings. So not only has he had a good series, though, Travis Shaw, he's had some clutch moments in pinch-hitting situations late. And if you're going to – I keep saying if you're going to have a deep run in October, and we're not, but if you're going to have a deep run in October, you need to find your Johnny Gomes. And right now it kind of does look like Travis Shaw, but you know, there's been some others who have had a little bit of magic over the course of the second half. But right now he certainly looks like the guy. He's playing for his life. He's not going to get a massive contract at this point anyway. He's going to be playing the rest of his career year to year. So whether he's auditioning for the Red Sox to be a bench guy next year, he's given it all that he has and coming through in big moments, and maybe he'll end up someplace else next year. But he's a guy I love rooting for. I've said before on previous shows, especially recently, I'm a big Brewers guy. I enjoyed watching him have the best year of his career there in 2018. And he's a guy, unless he's wearing pinstripes, he's a guy I'm going to root for. I probably, it'd be tough if he was a Dodger, though. I'll say that. But I like Travis Shaw.
I can't say anything bad against that. I mean, he's, what, 9-for-33 since joining up with Boston. He's hitting .272. He's had, I think, 3 home runs and 10 RBIs. And his games, the hits that he's getting, they're coming at super clutch moments. He only had 6 homers in Milwaukee. He's had 30 at-bats. He's already got 10 RBIs. He's averaging 1 RBI every 3 at-bats. I'll take that. Like, I'll take it every time. Especially considering you don't play every day, and most of your at-bats, at least when you look at it on paper, they're one-offs. You're getting 1 at-bat a game, maybe 2. The games that you come in and you actually play the whole game, if you've had 3 at-bats or more, you've done your job. You've done major work. So I'm really happy with the signing. I'm cool with it, with him being a stud in this series. Without Travis Shaw, we get swept, and it's not even close. So he did everything he needed to do. I don't care that he struck out a couple times in the series. 3-for-9, great work. Stellar pick.
And it's going to be fun to watch him over the course of the next remaining roughly three weeks or so. All right. So let's see. Anyone else? Xander Bogaerts back from COVID, 3-for-7. 2-for-3 game, and well, so all of his hits. Actually, I added it wrong. Looks like he was might have been 4-for-7, which botches my whole. I can't do math either, Charlie. 3-for-7. That's what I'm showing. So either way, back from COVID, you need Xander Bogaerts in that lineup, and yeah, so good, decent series for him, because he could have went 0-for-20 and I wouldn't have been shocked, but he's already seemingly back to being productive again. Bobby Dalbec, love him or hate him, 3-for-13. Did have 6 strikeouts, but homered in game 1, so that's not as good as I thought it might have been. And Alex Verdugo, 2-for-10, did drive in the only run today in the series finale, but outside of them, not a whole lot to write home about.
Right. Yep. It's going to be a situation where we need the relievers to continue to light up, and we need to find some unexpected, wonderful production from names that we don't anticipate or expect to dominate until all of your stars from the beginning of this year start to refine themselves and start mashing, and these younger kids like Bobby Dalbec can continue doing what they've been doing, because Bobby Dalbec's been on tear.
Absolutely. I'm just trying to, I didn't write today's pitching lines down, but Ryan Brazier's back. He doesn't, I mean, he's not his 2020 self, which was arguably his best, I don't know, his best couple of months. Well, he was pretty good in 2018, I guess, but his short sample size in 2020, certainly better than 2019. Yeah, so he didn't pitch in the finale here, but pitched a total of 2 innings, only gave up 1 run, 2 hits, 1 walk, and strikeouts not quite there yet, but he's a little higher on my trust ladder than some other guys in the bullpen, and if he can lock in and the strikeouts do kind of increase a little bit, he's a guy I'm going to go to in high leverage, maybe perhaps not the 8th or 9th inning, but early in the game. We're only getting 3 to 5 innings out of our starters. So you need a guy like Brazier to come in, even if it's the 5th or 6th inning. So, we'll see there. And Taylor also had a pretty good series. Didn't give up an earned run. Only got four outs total, but no runs given up, no walks, no hits either. So hopefully he's back. I mean, they're primarily utilizing him mostly against lefties regardless, but he was having a rough time before going on the COVID IL. And like Xander, he's kind of bounced back pretty well.
Right.
Yeah, so that will about do it for studs and duds. I can't wait to see that Yankees brawl. The whole audience will have seen it by the time we come on. But let's see. The Red Sox are going to Seattle for a brief West Coast swing. So I'm pulling up the matchups right now.
So the first one, you got Eduardo Rodriguez against Logan Gilbert. Erod makes me a little bit nervous. And the reason for that being is we have not seen consistent Erod this year. The only plus side of this entire matchup is that in his only game when he did face Seattle, he actually did decently well. Now, Logan Gilbert has not pitched against the Red Sox this year. He's a more consistent pitcher when he's on it. The whole month of August was just, I don't even know what happened to Gilbert. It was very unlike him. He had one quality start. He allowed a total of 24 earned runs in 23 and two thirds. I mean, he just could not get it done. He hadn't done anything remotely close to being that bad at all this year. I'm torn because you don't know which Erod you're going to get. You could get the normal Erod that allows four runs. You can get the stellar Erod that, you know, blanks Tampa Bay, or you get the Erod to start after that that gets shelled and doesn't even get out of the fourth inning. So I'm actually going to go with the hot hand right now, and that's Logan Gilbert in this one for game one.
Erod's been up and down, and if the pattern holds up, this should be a better start for him. It's in a pitcher-friendly park, but here's the bad news. Logan Gilbert's last two starts, one on September 1st, the other on September 7th, both against the Houston Astros. He pitched a total of 9 1/3 innings, only gave up two earned runs total in 9 1/3. So he's coming off a couple of good starts, quite frankly, against a better offensive team than what the Red Sox are. So that's a tough start. And even with his on-paper stats, a 5.10 ERA, Red Sox have been struggling against those types of pitchers in the second half. So you need Erod to be on, and you need the Red Sox looking at that wild card race thinking, oh, crap, the Blue Jays might run away with it. We better put up some hits and some crooked numbers. You need to start seeing that urgency. We already discussed earlier in the show, we're not seeing the leadership right now in certain aspects. So hopefully, I'm going to agree with you. I'm just going with a loss on that one. Yeah. Game two.
They're close, but Gilbert has just, I think he's got a little bit more consistency and won't let the small things get affected. Seattle also is playing for a playoff spot. The Red Sox may be, you know, pumping the brakes a little bit, just kind of saying, okay, this may not be the series that we need to crack it here. Seattle needs that. They doubly win here. If Seattle wins and the Red Sox lose, that's a double win for Seattle. So they're going to be, I think they're going to be fighting and grinding a little bit more in this series in particular.
Absolutely. Nathan Eovaldi versus Tyler Anderson, game two. Anderson also pitched in the Houston series, only lasted 4 2/3, and Astros put up four earned runs on him. That was September 8th. And then on the 3rd of September, he went six innings against the lowly Arizona Diamondbacks, who managed to muster three earned runs against him. So perhaps we're catching Anderson at a pretty good time. He's basically a journeyman in MLB. 31 years old, landed with the Mariners. He's going against Nathan Eovaldi, who at face value, has had a great year, a pretty stellar second half. I think he's got a 3.43 ERA in the second half, which isn't really much off from his first half anyway. But I'm going with Eovaldi on this one.
Yeah, you and I are aligned. I'm going to go Eovaldi on this one too. I just think that if one guy doesn't meet the eye test, you got to go with the guy that definitely does. And Eovaldi is the one that has been doing stellar work. Eovaldi so far, Tampa Bay, Cleveland, no slouch teams. ERA, just over 2. Still doesn't have a win in his last 4 starts. He's averaged a total of 1.5 earned runs over 6 innings. And he has no wins. That's not a knock at Eovaldi. That's a knock at the offense. They're not doing their job. He's been able to lower his ERA consistently each week, each game, doing his job, striking out 6-7 guys a game. He went 7-7-9-8. He's allowed 3 home runs in the last 4 games. I'm going to Eovaldi here.
Do you think Eovaldi can finish top 10, like maybe like 8th or 9th in the Cy Young? I don't know if he's been that good.
What are you looking at my notes for some potential questions coming up or something? What's going on over there?
I haven't seen anything. Okay. All right. Teaser teaser for the next show, apparently. Charlie kind of spearheaded Totally Legit or Calling the Cops. Always an entertaining episode. So potentially some of Eovaldi talk in that episode. So I'll move off of him. Tanner Houck versus Marco Gonzalez in Game 3. Gonzalez, both of his last 2 starts were against the Arizona Diamondbacks. The start on September 4th got knocked around, 5 innings, 5 earned runs. He followed that up with a much better rematch against the Astros on the 10th of September, 6 innings, no earned runs. So tough to really get a feel for what the Red Sox might do with him. However, Tanner Houck, again, getting the start in that final game, and it's tough to be too optimistic with him based on the kind of roller coaster. Could be a 4-inning outing. You're going to the bullpen, and this is a feisty Seattle Mariners team. So, loss for me in that game.
I unfortunately have the same. And the reason for that being is I can trust one guy to get past the 4th inning on a consistent base, and the other one, I don't know. One is going 5, 6, 7 innings on a regular basis. So far, Marco Gonzalez, since the beginning of August, has one start where he hasn't gone at least 5+. He's gone 5 innings only once. The rest of them, 6, 9, 6 2/3, 6, 6, 7. He shut out Texas, and it's Texas. They're not great, but you still did it. And he's cracked the 100 pitch number 3 times. Tanner Houck hasn't cracked more than 90, I think, at all this year. He hit 90 twice. And Marco Gonzalez has hit 90, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 out of his last 8. I'm going Gonzalez here too. I don't feel very good about this series, unfortunately.
Yeah, and the Red Sox, they're just not, they've shown flashes of it. We had a pretty good run to close out August into the earlier part of September. We didn't lose a series for, I think it was 5 consecutive, something like that. So they grinded, but not quite over the hump. And here we have, I think we lost what our 2nd straight series, and we're not set up well for Seattle. So they just have to start owning it. They need to rise to the occasion and stop making errors that are leading to unearned runs. And this would be a good series to make that statement. The Mariners are 3 games back, so maybe the Red Sox can beat them back a little. And yeah. Do you know who's after the series? Is it Baltimore again, or is it New York?
After Seattle is actually Baltimore, and then it's 5 against New York teams. Two against the Mets, three against the Yankees, followed by three Balti, three Washington.
Okay. Even Washington, I mean, if Juan Soto's in a lineup, I'm a little nervous. So, not the greatest schedule. I think Toronto has six or seven games against Tampa. We don't have to look it up, but that could be helpful if Tampa can do us a solid and win some.
Toronto, we're a little foreshadowing here. Toronto's got seven against Minnesota and three against Baltimore closing out the season.
Oh my,
that's
bad.
Pretty nice.
So no more against Tampa?
No. I'm just just quickly, because I just jotting down some notes from earlier. Those are two teams you definitely want to face.
Yeah.
Those are like spoon fed wins right there. Minnesota, Baltimore, Texas. Those teams are bottom of the barrel.
Okay. Well, hopefully the Yankees. We might be catching them at the right time. So they swept us last time, and I think thumped us the time before that as well. So. We'll get into it. There's still a few more weeks of regular season to get into. We'll have to have a contingency plan for postseason coverage if the Red Sox don't make it. But we'll start looking at that in the coming days as well. I'm a big fan of postseason baseball, regardless of whether the Red Sox are in it, though obviously my preference is that they are in it. So, all right, we will wrap on that 24 hours after this one. Totally Legit or Calling the Cops, my favorite episode of the month. So everyone have a good start to your work week. Take care.